Good morning, and welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we are starting a little bit late, but we are going to have a dynamic show for you. We have online with us Dr. James L. Chorin, and we are talking to him in Russia. Dr. Chorin, welcome to the show.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, now, you're a fascinating man. Your book, Footprints in the Snow, Tales of Haunted Russia, absolutely amazed me because my husband and myself, we have a tremendous fascination with Russian history, and we have done a lot of reading regarding it. And here you are, a man who went over to Russia about 17 years ago, and you have had the most awesome experiences with the paranormal. What took you to Russia? First of all, where are you in Russia? Where are you located? And what
I am about 25 miles northeast of Moscow. I live in a suburb of Moscow.
Is that Mamontovka?
Mamontovka. It's a little bitty place. It's just a little bedroom community from Moscow.
Now, what took you to Russia?
Eastman Kodak
took you to Russia. Now, you say in your introduction in your book that you were a reporter.
I've been working in the newspaper business more or less all my life.
But Eastman Kodak took you there.
I worked for the Kodak Overseas Division and came here with them. I left Kodak in 2000.
In 2000. Well, now here you are with this brand new book, Footprints in the Snow, Tales of Haunted Russia. What prompted you to put all of this together? Because you have been involved in paranormal research for years, and all of these stories have been pretty much documented, and you call yourself a skeptic. Why did you feel that these stories had to be shared?
I picked those stories because they were the best documented of a massive amount of material. I call myself a skeptic. I do believe, but when you're conducting an investigation, you have to put your own personal belief or disbelief aside. It's just like conducting a police investigation. If a police officer witnesses a crime, he's still going to go through the same investigation procedure that he would go through had he not seen it himself. It's the same with any sort of investigation if it's going to be valid.
Now, Dr. Chorin,
you have to be a skeptic.
You have to be a skeptic. Well, I think that's a good positioning for you to take. Now, you start off your book with one story that I was intrigued with. It grabbed my attention immediately. You titled it The Lady in the Lamplight. And
the police inspector.
Yes, tell us about that, and that's Major Shukin. Tell us about Major Shukin. He retired in
1999. He was the police prefect in one of our little neighboring towns. And this country is it's a great deal different from the States. People here accept paranormal activity as being valid. They will report it. They will also investigate it. The actual authorities will. So we had Major Schuschkin, who is known to be very good at investigating any kind of case, but they call him in when something's a little odd. Basically, what was happening was there was a girl appearing, standing under a lamppost in front of the railway station in Pushkin every night. Well, it happened every single night. She would stand there and smoke and chain smoke cigarettes under the lamppost. This coincided with an engineering battalion coming in to do some work on the railway platform. Well, the natives began to get restless. They're seeing this girl standing out there. You know, everybody knows what this is.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept calling the police to, you know, go and, you know, pick this girl up. Well, but they never could find her. She'd be gone when they got there. Well, one time they got there and she was there, but they actually saw her go. She just vanished.
And so what happened after that? Because there was quite an investigation.
It was at this point that they called Schuschkin, who was retired, and of course this is Russia, you know. They didn't pay him.
Uh-huh.
But they called him in to help with the case. So he started out by assuming that it was a missing person.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes through all of the missing person reports. There's nothing in the missing person reports. He goes through all of the homicide, all of the the old documents, going back for about 25 years, judging from the way she was dressed. Of course, and everybody in town had seen her, so he had talked to practically everybody about what this girl looks like. Eventually, he found the records for a missing persons report that had a photograph attached that matched the girl. And she had disappeared from the old Pushkin Railway Station Hotel. Back in 1971 or 72, something like that. He decides this is the person, and he's going to try to prove out what he's saying. So
mm-hmm.
The next morning, he goes down to where they're doing the work and grabs a bunch of guys from the engineering battalion, and they start digging up the tarmac along the railroad tracks from the lamppost running down by the hotel. About 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they found human remains.
And they were able to assume that it was this young girl, but there was another part of the story. There was a former porter.
There was a former porter who had seen the girl standing there waiting for the train, but when he looked around, he saw that she was gone. He just assumed she'd gone back in the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
That's what prompted Schuschkin to start digging. But they found the remains, and the coroner's report, of course they had to take the remains to the coroner. The coroner's report verified that it was a young woman. She was in the right age range. Had suffered a concussion, probably not fatal. But this was in the wintertime when it happened. And apparently she had been struck by an object thrown by a passing train, been knocked unconscious, and covered with snow. She died of exposure and hypothermia. But the thing is, at the point where they found the remains, had they not started digging there and looking, when the construction people were finished, there was a 3-foot-thick layer of cement placed on top of this. The body would never have been found.
And so she kept appearing until the body was found, and then after that,
until
the girl
they finally started looking for the body.
And then she no longer showed up.
She stopped completely. There was never another sighting.
Well, it has been known for years that the Russian government, as well as the U.S. government and other groups throughout the world, have been very deeply involved with research on the paranormal. And do they still have the scientific experiments as they were doing so many years ago? Because the Russians were far advanced over the U.S. as far
Russia
as...
Russia has always taken an interest. This goes back always, as long as there's been a possibility to conduct experiments. It goes back to the time of the Tsars. Of course, they still conduct them. People are encouraged here to report incidents. This is one of the things that struck me as being funny. You would think that and I got here in the old days, you know, before the changes.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that with the rigid doctrines, you know, of the old communist regime, they would discourage any kind of investigation into this kind of activity, except what was conducted by the government.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was one of those really well-laid plans that backfired.
How did it backfire?
What they did when Lenin's government first took power, they started trying to disprove anything supernatural. Everything had to have a rational explanation, so they wanted to disprove all of this. In order to disprove it, they had to have reports. So they encouraged people to report anything unusual. The more reports they got, the more they investigated, and the more they investigated, the more they found out that it is real.
And the
policy of reporting stayed in place.
So now
you still have the apparatus set up for people to report this kind of incident to the police, the medical authorities, the security authorities, the fire authorities, and it goes on and on. You get valid reports. And they conduct a valid investigation, so you have documentation on it.
Why do you think it is, Dr. Charan, that there is such an attitude among those people in, let's say, research and investigative positioning here in the United States that don't want to be as comfortable in talking about it as those in Russia do?
It's a difference in ideology. I think the best way to sum it up would be the definition that the Russians use for paranormal.
What is their definition?
The Russian definition for paranormal, and it's one of the best ones I've ever heard. The paranormal is that which demonstrably exists, but does so outside what is considered normal by the society and culture that surrounds it.
That is a good approach.
So they have it's a demonstrable thing. You have the evidence. You have the proof that it exists. Now all you have to do is prove what it is. So that's the approach they take to it.
Well, I found your stories and your information very refreshing. You have a story in here. And by the way, for those of you listening, we're talking with Dr. James L. Choron, and his last name is spelled C-H-O-R-O-N. He is an American. He has been living in Russia for 17 years. He is a man who has been involved with the paranormal for just as long, and he's a total skeptic. Yet his stories will just have you absolutely gripped by the seat of your pants, believe me. You have the story in here about the old Soviet man. And really liked him. And
That is a personal story.
Yes, and you must share that with my audience.
That is a personal story. That is about our building.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in this building has had some kind of experience with him, myself included. I didn't believe the stories at first. I've lived in this building for a long time. And at first, I didn't believe the stories. Then I had my own little experience with him. And I began to collect all of the other accounts from people that I knew in the building. We have, I guess you'd call it a guardian. He's an old guy. He dresses when the people that have seen him, I've never actually seen him, but the people that have seen him and have made the physical reports on it say that he's an old guy and he dresses in workers' clothing from around the turn of the century. And they describe him as being bald-headed and always having some kind of tools or tools with him and a rag in his pocket, this kind of thing. He will tinker around and putter around like he's working on things in the building. But if something goes wrong with the building, we always know. For example, if there's a fire, the fire alarms will go off before the fire is bad enough to trigger the fire alarms. We have an elevator that's a little cantankerous. This building is old, and the old elevator doesn't have an alarm. And if the elevator sticks between floors, the alarm in the new elevator across the hall will go off. So that someone knows that, you know, one of the elevators is stuck. The kids that live in the building all have reported seeing him standing at the door waiting for them and counting heads to see that all of the kids that are supposed to be in the building are returning from school.
Now, you call him Tovarish Nachalnik.
Tovarish Nachalnik. That means comrade building superintendent.
Yes, and he's about 70 years of age, and I love the description in the book that you have. You say he's wearing a collarless belted tunic that pulls over
mm-hmm.
his head, and it only has three buttons, and he has baggy pants tucked over.
You know, it's the kind you pull over your head.
Mm-hmm. And baggy pants tucked over the top of his boots, or into the top of his boots. And you said that they were the large, heavy-looking felt boots that were
common. Big, heavy felt boots that the peasants used to wear.
Mm-hmm. And a little visored cap.
And he had one of these little cloth visored caps. We call them a car cap, I guess.
Uh-huh. So you wouldn't trade your old Soviet man for any other building superintendent?
We wouldn't want anybody else. The building actually caught fire one time. We had a fire. There's a dumpster outside the building. And there was a fire in the dumpster that had begun climbing up. It had gotten bad enough to climb up trees that overhung balconies. And the fire had not reached the building, but the fire alarms all went off.
Mm-hmm.
And we found the fire. There was one family that had their cat came up missing. And they looked for the little cat 2 or 3 days. And finally there was a loud hammering and banging coming from inside the old coal bunker. We used to have a coal-fired furnace. And there was a loud banging and clanking coming from inside the coal bunker. They open the coal bunker, and out comes the cat.
Mm-hmm.
It's this kind of thing that's interesting. I don't really look at the, the famous people, the famous stories.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's already seen all of them. I don't really think anybody's interested in hearing another story about the lost princess or Ivan the Terrible. There's been a lot of things written about them already. Some of it's true. What I've tried to put in this collection are stories that are verifiable, documentable, but the kind of common thing that is reported.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing really spectacular about any of them as far as anybody knowing who these people are. There's one or two that, maybe somebody would recognize. But most of them deal with just common, ordinary people.
Well, I know we're running out of time here, and before we do, I wanted to share quickly one of the stories. I'm going to compress it a little bit. You have so many in your book about Footprints in the Snow, Tales of Haunted Russia. And again, my guest is James L. Choron. You talk
about...
Yeah,
that's available at Amazon,
mm-hmm.
Barnes & Noble, Lightning Source, and from the publisher.
Right. And do you have a website?
No, I do not.
All right. So they can just get it directly from the bookstores, like you said, on Amazon. But I want to share this one story.
I have a very nice place on the Zemeya Publications website.
Okay. And what is that website?
For the life of me, it escapes me right now. It's www.zemeyabooks.com, I think.
Is that Z-A-M-E-A book?
Z-U-M-A-Y-A.
Z-U-M-A-Y-A.
A, mm-hmm. I think that's it.
Okay. Wonderful. But again, for those of you listening, it's Footprints in the Snow, Tales of Haunted Russia, and the author's name is James L. Choron. And, James, I know it's just about time for us to take a break right now, but I will share one of the stories. I want to share the story about the Stand Until Relieved, and I know we are out of time here, so we're at the bottom of the hour, and we're going to be going to a break, but I want to, again, do this quickly, because you said in 54 years, the residents of Pushkino, it's a little town just down a railroad line from a mine, those that would be driving at night would report sighting armed men, three or four soldiers and an officer, standing around the Ucha River Bridge on the western outskirts of town, but they didn't pay too much attention to it because they saw soldiers there all the time. It wasn't unusual. But it changed a little bit in the early 1960s because the uniforms of the soldiers changed, and that's when people started paying attention to these soldiers up on this bridge. They began to notice that these soldiers were not wearing the new uniforms. They were wearing the older uniforms, and you had Major Anatoly Shukin, that he said he had been aware of these reports for 15 years as a senior officer. He'd send somebody out to investigate. They wouldn't find anything, and he just thought people were having too much to drink. And whenever the cars got out there in the area, whenever he'd send somebody out, those soldiers would just vanish. But one night he went out there himself, and what he saw, he knew he hadn't been drinking. And it was in the summer of 1997, someone was doing research, and they found that there was some very interesting information about this particular location. And it seemed that during the war in the spring of 1943, just after the Red Army had retaken the area from the Germans, a detail of four soldiers from the barracks, led by a young lieutenant named Daniel Inko, were ordered to go out and secure the bridge over the Utah and to stand there and hold their ground until they were relieved. Now, relief never came, but the Germans did. They counterattacked and retook the area, at least temporarily, and these men were never seen again. Now, Major Shukin, this man is really interesting to me because he decided he was going to look around the bridge. And after 2 hours, they found the body of one soldier and then the other three. And there was really quite an uproar over this. And so what they did, they had a burial detail. Local newspapers wrote the story. And the soldiers were finally buried in the Pushkino City Cemetery. But this didn't end the sightings. And what ended those sightings?
Well, they began to think, they originally believed that by giving them a proper burial, the sightings would end. But they didn't. Well, Shushkin got to thinking about the nature of their orders. These guys were soldiers in the Red Army, and they were told during wartime to stand their ground until they were relieved. So he, just on a whim, went out to the barracks and talked to a friend of his who was the commandant at the barracks, and they just grabbed four soldiers at random. Loaded them into two jeeps, drove out to the bridge, and did a real, proper military relief ceremony that relieved Lieutenant Danielenko of his position. They left the four new soldiers there. They stayed there overnight. The next morning, they came back and got them, and the sightings ended.
And the sightings ended. Just a very logical process of thinking about procedure, following it through. And even though they had the burial previously, the soldiers then were at peace. They had done their job.
My favorite stories, you can't really say you have a favorite one, but the two that I am partial to are called Our Little Hero and Legion of the Damned.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two that I was involved in the Our Little Hero story from almost the beginning of the resolution of the story. And the Legion of the Damned story is something that recurs every year. We had reports again this year on that one. The Little Hero story is about a little girl about 5 years old who literally saved her town from the Germans in 1941. But was killed in the process. They buried her. Her father received a medal, which is called the Hero of the Soviet Union Medal. It's the second highest medal this country gave. And when they buried the remains of the daughter...
Well, I think we've lost our guest, Dr. Chorin, but we've run out of time. We are going to be taking a break. This is Donna Sebo, Footprints in the Snow, Tales of Haunted Russia. His book is a must read. And these are all documented paranormal experiences. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break now. And I'm sorry we had to cut that off, but you can get that book in Amazon.com. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. 1832 Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and I'm sorry we lost the author, but we were out of time. And again, I want to mention Dr. James Choron, C-H-O-R-O-N. His book is Footprints in the Snow, Tales of Haunted Russia. So anyway, I wanted to give that information out again, and this is where you can, I found some information here for you. You can contact Zumea Publications, and they are zumeapublications.com, and you will be able to find information about his book. It is available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble nationwide, and you will be able to get it just about anywhere. It is a fascinating publication, and again, all of this is documented. Also, I want to let you know telephone lines are now open, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And we also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. And I want to tell you, it's happening, it's coming. I'm going to be appearing at the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair, and that's going to be August 4th, 5th, 11th, 12th, 18th, and 19th. Yes, those are the first three weekends in the month of August, and that's the weekend coming up. And by golly, I'm looking forward to it. I've been working with these people for a number of years, and it is a marvelous, marvelous experience. For those of you listening from the state of Washington, I know we've got a lot of listeners, just know that these are three weekends just oriented towards family fun. It's going to be at the Mentor Creek Ranch at 10215 State Road 302 in Gig Harbor. That's the Mentor Creek Ranch, 10215 State Road 302 in Gig Harbor. And you can go to their website, Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. The hours are 10 to 6 in the evening, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. in the evening. Entertainment of all kinds. Look for my booth on Main Street. I have a booth with bright yellow banners with gigantic red lions on them. And that is my identification. So you look for that and you'll find it. But I'm on the Main Street there. It is just an activity that is so wonderful. You step back in time. You can come to the festival in costume yourself. And because it's a fantasy fair, you can come in anything, generally, that you design and work out. And it's wonderful what people come up with. So we'll be chatting about this every day, all the way through till the end of this phenomenal event. And I encourage you, go to their website, WashingtonRenaissanceFantasyFair.com. You will find out all about it. Get the pass information, all of those details. It'll be absolutely marvelous. Again, Donna Sebo here, and telephone lines are open at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And I have been getting such wonderful stories from all of you. I so appreciate you doing that, and I wanted to share one in particular. Oh, by the way, if you want to send me a story, if you've got an awesome recipe that just is to die for, I had someone that was chatting with me over the weekend. I said, oh, I've got this recipe. I've got to send it to you. I said, great, do that. Send it to me at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. I got an email from Michael, and it was I really liked the approach on this. Michael is a teacher, and he feels that character counts. Character counts. In fact, he has a website called charactercounts.org. And this is what he said. He said, teachers have a lifelong effect on the way students think. Psychologist Hyman's Gnotfed focused on a more immediate aspect of impact, the creation of a positive or negative physical and emotional environment that can determine the quality of a child's life. Well, I think almost all of us would have an understanding about that. We have an awareness through our own experiences or maybe experiences we have observed with others. But he said, he came to a frightening conclusion. He said, I'm the decisive element in the classroom. My personal approach creates the climate. My daily mood makes the weather. As a teacher, I possess a tremendous power to make a child's life miserable or joyous. I can be a tool of torture or an instrument of inspiration. I can humiliate or humor, hurt or heal. It is my response that decides whether a crisis will be escalated or de-escalated, and a child humanized or dehumanized. And Michael said, this is such a profound observation. He said, especially for we professional educators. And it's a profound observation for parents. Because it is up to a parent to create the daily climate and a lasting environment in which the child grows. This is so awesome. I know we've got a caller. I'll get to that caller in just a moment. That it must be used consciously and responsibly. And I just want to finish up his statement here. He says, since our daily moods make the weather, we should try to shield our children from the thunder and lightning of our frustrations and anger. And instead of dark clouds of cynicism, fear, and depression, we should discipline our own emotions and give them the light and warmth of love, hope, and good cheer. Conscious efforts to be positive, enthusiastic, and supportive can have a huge impact not only on the emotional well-being of our children, but on their ability to experience the joys and pains of childhood in healthy and constructive ways. I want to thank Michael for sending me that information because I think he's right on the money, and I appreciate very much that story and that information. We've got a caller on the line. Let's go to our first caller and welcome them, first name or initial, and where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Melbourne Village, Florida.
Well, and your name, please, sir?
Michael.
Michael.
But it's a different Michael.
Oh, it's a different...
I said email.
Oh.
Okay, but anyway, the last person you had on the show was very right and very informative. And he's very good about being a skeptic because of the fact that I've read many, many spiritual traditions. I spent years studying them. And nobody's really got it exactly right. You know what? I don't. Nobody's got it right. I've had a number of psychics who can say nobody can read me. Well, Mace, I can't read myself. Everything keeps coming up roses.
Well, Michael, I think that Dr. Choron brought out something that was very significant, and that was that in Russia, so much of this is very much accepted, and the research on this has been quite extensive, and that it's the different cultural positioning of people in their thinking, and it's the language that is used. And in Russian history, so much of this is very, very acceptable because people have experienced it to such a depth.
I agree with you on that, actually. That's why I wanted to say it was very good, because of the fact that the reason I have trouble communicating with people in this culture is because of the fact they, it's like you live in the Show Me State of Missouri, which I've lived in for many years.
Well,
I'm there now. I've moved to Washington, D.C., and Kansas, and Texas, and there's lots of regional conflicts between all that areas. And on the other hand, the whole thing about it is that we don't believe. Unless you can prove it, it happens. I'm an energy healer, And so I just sort of find out what's going on. I can't explain it. And from all I know, and I've researched a whole lot, nobody else can either.
Well, I agree, Michael. And I think that that is something that nobody ever knows at all. But as long as we can keep an open mind and an understanding that there's always going to be another level to explore. We may be able to find one particular aspect, but there's always going to be others that we need to be aware of. And as we become more alert and more attuned and more curious, that exploration will expand our understanding even more. Michael,
well, that's right.
I appreciate
the only problem with it is that, like, I'm blind as a bat. I got like 90% third eye energy. I can open psychics up like mad. But on the other hand, I psychically see very little. My third eye is strong. It's my strongest chakra. But on the other hand, I don't pick up shit. But the whole thing about it, it boils down to this. And that is that the messages from the higher dimensions are so different from our understanding, we can't interpret them. And
well,
so
we're stuck
here in this world, and we got to deal with the bills, and we got to deal with the other things, and we got to figure out how to make it where things change around so we stop destroying the world.
Michael, I'm going to have to go on break. I really appreciate your comments. But
okay,
thank you,
and I love talking to you. And I want to say that I haven't gotten much benefit off of your readings, but I've had many readings from many people, and I haven't got benefits off of that because spirits just say, figure it out yourself, idiot.
Thank you, Michael. You have a great day.
You have a good day yourself.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for a moment, and then we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss, book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.DelphiInternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and her website is www.DelphiInternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and I know we've got a caller on the line. I want to let you know the telephone number that is available is 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. And tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Eric Jensen. And Eric is going to tell us how we can enrich our brains. And believe it or not, you can do it. So, let's go to our next caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Calling from Phoenix, and my name is Shelly.
Hi, Shelly. Did you call in the other day, hon?
No.
Oh, I thought you did. Okay. Now, Shelly, the first thing that I'm looking at with you is a very, very busy schedule. I believe that you are going to find yourself in the midst of wondering how you are going to manage certain situations. you are going to be aware of some challenges that are going to be coming into your arena. Probably between the 15th and the 21st of August is when certain things are going to be coming up. As this evolves, you are going to discover that you will need to do certain things to keep particular activities into place. And if you want to follow through, take care of the details, you're going to need to pay attention to what your gut instincts tell you. This is going to be extremely important for you. So you need to really understand that what is happening here with you is going to demand a great deal of attention on your part. You are not going to be able to just pass things over. Very, very important. So if you can get it together quickly, you're going to have some pretty substantial accomplishments, and you're going to be pleased with what you achieve this year. What's on your mind, dear? What did you want to ask me?
Do you see, I work on commission, and I'm really working to speed things up as far as income goes. Do you see that increasing starting this week, next week, into the following week?
Well, what kind of work are you doing? What type of...
I get paid weekly, and I'm an independent contractor, and
okay. All right, as an independent contractor, what I am observing with you, it's pretty much going to be fairly level. There are potentially two opportunities for you that I think are going to work out quite well, but it's going to take you about 2 to 3 months before you are going to get them. So I'm not seeing a big jump in income at this point. Now, there are 1, 2, 3 marginals that are there. And I don't know how much time or effort you're going to want to put into those prospects that are marginal. I think you're going to have to feel those out. But I'm not seeing a big jump right away.
Okay.
Doesn't mean it couldn't happen, but I'm just not looking at it right now.
Okay. Well, I thank you.
You're very welcome. And I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
And you enjoy your day.
Bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo here, 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. From Canada, it's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And I want to remind you, this coming weekend and the 2 weekends following, I'm going to be appearing at the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair, August 4th, 5th, 11th, 12th, 18th, and 19th. All of that is going to be available, and I'm going to be appearing there. This is a wonderful organization of people that has really brought such a joy into my life because of this activity. And I'm so supportive of it because I see so many wonderful people benefiting as well. And I love to watch the kids. This is a family event. It's being held at the Mentor Creek Ranch at 10215 State Road 302 in Gig Harbor. And the hours are from 10 in the morning until 6 in the evening. And when you walk through the castle gates, you're going to find yourself just absolutely mesmerized with all of the various activities that go on, the people in costume, you're really going to feel like you've stepped back into the Renaissance. And it is so much fun. And the kids love all of the big horses, the equestrian events, there's games that go on, there's stage performances, there's shops all over the place, craftsmen that show how they made things during that Renaissance period. So we invite you to come out and come on and say hello. Stop by my booth. You'll notice that it will have these bright yellow banners with gigantic red lions on it. That's the logo that I use for that show, and it's absolutely wonderful to be participating in this fabulous event. So I look forward to having you stop by, say hello, and again, the first 3 weekends in August, and number one is coming up this weekend. That's the 4th and 5th, and then the 11th, 12th, and 18th and 19th. Hope to see you there. Do stop by and say hello, though. I'm also going to be doing many readings, and I'll have books there as well. Donna Sebo here, and the telephone number is 877-876-5227. I wanted to ask you, do you know very much about Bugs Bunny? Well, I had someone send me some information, and I know that I have it right here. Ah, yes, good old Bugsy. He is just an icon of the cartoon environment. He's just wonderful. And why do we love him? Well, he's a wascally wabbit, right? Well, he made his debut during July in 1940. In fact, it was July 27th, 1940. And the very first production was called A Wild Hare, and it was with Elmer Fudd. And the cartoon marked the very first time that the world ever heard, "Hey, what's up, Doc?" Yep. There's been more than 175 animated shorts and a few movies that have made with Bugs Bunny, and do you know he's still right at the top of the charts when it comes to favorite cartoon characters. Now, why do we like him so much? Well, he's a little bit of a smart aleck. He's a wise guy who always has the upper hand. And he gets away with just about everything, doesn't he? I mean, he's just incredible. He does not apologize for his actions, and he seems to overcome all adversities. And he's just absolutely an amazing characterization. Now, World War II factored into a lot of the early Bugs Bunny cartoons. Bugs was even used to sell war bonds in a program called Any Bonds Today. And do you know what? He really was an amazing character because not only have the cartoons, Bugs Bunny cartoons, received critical acclaim and they were loved by millions, but What's Opera, Doc, was the first animated short subject to be inducted into the National Film Registry, and 1958's Nighty Night Bugs even won an Academy Award. So there's all kinds of wonderful information on that character, and this was sent to me, some information about Bugs, and let me see. The young lady, Katie Lambert, is the one that wrote up so much of the material that I just shared with you, and she has just done all kinds of research on this wonderful character and the people associated with it. But I so appreciate the individual, Lon, who sent the contact information along to me. I really, really appreciate that. You know, it's so many of you have given me so much information, and my goodness, the authors that I have as guests on the shows, they give me so much information as well. And it's absolutely a delight to be able to interact with so many people and to bring their information to you, like my guest James Chorin out of Russia. It just shows you what a small world it really, really is. And I would like to think that we could continue to do this. So just know that we're going to be achieving even more things right here on BBSRadio.com. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. There is so much that you can do, and you're going to be opening up yourself to new opportunities and new challenges that will come along with those opportunities. And it's always an adventure to see how we're going to handle them. This is Donna Sebo. Remember again, you're the boss. Take care. We'll be talking with you tomorrow, and we're going to figure out how we can enrich your brain. God bless. Talk with you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.